Abadi, 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 abadi. I wish it was all, folks, but here comes the colonel.
All right, mirth and levity right here on a serious science program. Well, before we get to our visit with our new correspondent, Desi Mattel Anderson, let's step over here to our fountain of useless information, rummage around the coin jar just a minute, for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, the spirit of the fountain has awakened after we threw in the coins, because, of course, he knows all, hears all, sees all, and even tells all for a price. Well, here's a sports question for you, O spirit of the fountain. Pray tell us, which pro sports tour declined sponsorship by Tampax after 22 years of Virginia Slims? 22 years of Virginia Slims, and Tampax comes along and says, hey, we want to sponsor. And they said, no, no, no thanks. Hmm? Put on your thinking cap there and remember, oh, spirit of the fountain. Hmm?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Aha! The spirit of the fountain does know all, hear all, see all, and tell all for a price. The Pro Sports Tour, the declined sponsorship by Tampax after 22 years of Virginia Slims? Yes, it was the Women's Tennis Association. Can you believe it? How ironic. All right, let's get on. Okay, let's get on to our guest in the second half with our exciting announcement of our new correspondent. Okay, we've got an old friend back with us now. You remember Desi Mattel Anderson. I'm sure you do from the times when she was on with FEMA. And, right after the Oklahoma City tornado, it was in the field. Well, Desi is doing some things now. She has got some other projects going for her besides FEMA. And the big announcement is that Desi is now a news correspondent for the Science News Radio Network. We're so happy to have her. Welcome to the welcome to the whole operation, Desi.
Colonel, I'm so thrilled to be a part of the Science News Radio Network. We're going to have a lot of fun this year.
Yeah. Well, you were such a great guest, and you were so informative with so many wonderful things. So you left FEMA, and you're doing some other things, aside from what you're going to be doing for us as a news correspondent. Tell us why you left FEMA, and what are some of the things that you're up to?
Well, that's great. In fact, I, as you might remember, I was FEMA's chief innovation advisor for about a year, where we incubated a lot of innovation internally within the agency, as well as externally in deploying them. And if you remember, I think you mentioned, we did have some conversations about deploying real-time in the Oklahoma tornadoes with the Science News Radio Network, which is really cool. We've now built our field innovation team to continue to work with partners like FEMA, but we're working with other federal agencies, and we're taking on an international footprint. So doing the same great work that I was doing the past year, but doing it in a more informal side of things. So we're really excited to continue to deploy.
All right, so you're still working closely with FEMA, but you're doing it as an independent and along with some other organizations, NGOs and that sort of thing, or how does this work?
Yes, in fact, we work with a lot of different agencies and NGOs, and we'll continue to work and partner with FEMA in disasters when it's possible, but we'll be also working with groups like American Red Cross, some of the NGOs, Humanity Road, I can name a whole bunch, but basically, we'll be doing the same great work we did. In fact, Colonel, I'd love at some point during this to give you a little bit of a preview of some of the work we did when we spun out of government, including the work we did in the Philippine typhoon.
Oh, yeah, that would be fascinating. Can we talk about that now?
Absolutely. We did a virtual deployment during the Philippines typhoon. Luckily for us, we had just been catalyzing some of our innovations, including a wonderful cellular connectivity heat map, which allowed for the Philippine government, the state, UN departments, as well as communities and survivors to take a look at the cell infrastructure and the connectivity through a heat map of all the different carriers, so that we knew from island to island what the cell infrastructure was like. There's many other innovations, but that was a big one, and that was a team effort done by a couple of different companies working with the field innovation team. So we continue to deploy on a virtual, but the great thing about this kernel is we are now looking to physically deploy in the next big disaster in 2014. So a lot of really great impactful things virtually, but I think we're going to get ready to ramp up for the disaster season.
Okay, you said a heat map. Can you kind of drill down for us there and tell us a little bit more about exactly what that is so that we can get a full understanding?
Absolutely. That's a visualization tool. So the data that's collected through an app that was developed by OpenSignals, the Field Innovation Team, and a couple of other partners, they collected the information through this application that you could put on your cell phone. You could also put it in a sensor and fly it aerially, which we did in the Philippine typhoon. And it collects the data and the information. That data and information is then mapped up onto a heat map, which shows you the strength of signal for the cell phones in a given area.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it tells you the strength of the cell phones in any given area, but does it help you locate trouble spots?
That's great. In fact, you're bringing up a good point, Colonel. It's all about the why, right? Why does this matter? Well, this matters because it is giving people a big picture about what's going on the ground and where they have connectivity. So wherever there is not connectivity, the ground crews, along with the survivors, can know whether loved ones are able to call in and out or not. And so it gives a big picture of what's happened in the disaster and allows people to get into areas and to assist the survivors in the communities in order to get communications up and running.
Yeah, when the typhoon hits, it's going to take out all the existing power lines and the infrastructure and just decimate everything. And I imagine the cell phones then become an extremely vital thing. But what about the cell phone towers? Don't they go down too in that typhoon?
They do. They do go down. And so this isn't something that we were dealing with, Colonel. We just specifically dealt with looking at the situation awareness and mapping it out. And it was a very, very light deployment because we were just ramping up for our season. But I can tell you right now there's some really great things in the hopper for 2014 that we'll be deploying physically on the ground with communities and survivors and our government and nonprofit partners.
Okay, can you give us kind of a preview of what we have to look forward to? You know, like kind of a peek under the covers there?
Absolutely. Neat things are going on. We're working on a couple of really great we're working with a couple of great groups. And the first thing we're going to be doing in March is we're going to have a meeting with the Field Innovation Team members out in the mountains of Utah to have a conversation and to start to get ready to be trained and go out into disasters right before we think we're going to have a domestic disaster, because I'm pretty sure you can cut that part out. but needless to say, we're going to be catalyzing the Field Innovation Team in March to start training up for deployments that will be happening real soon in 2014. So some of these guys are working on some really neat projects, and I don't want to give away too many secrets, but I will tell you, I'll give you a sneak peek. We have some really neat artificial intelligence projects that are going to help us catalyze community need on the ground.
Really?
We also have, again, we'll be using situational awareness tools that will be shared with everyone, open source, so that anyone can build off of them and view them to help on the ground. We will also be working with designers to rethink and redesign different infrastructure and physical flow of some of the activities in disasters. There's just a whole lot of really neat things. And one thing we've been looking to do for the past year, and it's going to happen in a big way, is the robotics piece. We got some great people, including what I would coin the queen of robotics in the world, coming to join us to see how we can get some of these forward-leaning technologies out into the humanitarian space.
Okay, so the artificial intelligence is going to work hand-in-hand with these robots that you're talking about. Is that right?
It's highly likely, Colonel.
Okay, and of course the robots are becoming more and more useful all the time, being able to go into dangerous situations where there's chemical spills, where there's, of course, radiation and any number of other things. The terrible a tragedy that happened at Fukushima in Japan. A lot of people are saying that, you know, that there's some, maybe not likelihood, but certainly possibility of terrorist activities in the United States and seismic activities and those sorts of things. Japan was a natural disaster, but it took them so far off guard and lost power to their pumps and their generators and everything in such a wide range. I can imagine that you must be studying that and coming up with applications to use in the rest of the world in case of terrorist attacks or those sorts of things.
We do have a subject matter expert who's been down to Fukushima, and she's actually had a lot of experiences. And yes, luckily, due to the depth of experience on our team and on our bench, we are learning and studying case examples in order to innovate real time, but also to progressively move towards solutions that could potentially impact similarly situated disasters as Fukushima. So yes, we've got that skill set, we've got that talent, and most importantly, we've got that experience to help us innovate real time.
Well, there's so much in the world to do, and I mean, we're not talking about just typhoons and tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes and nuclear disasters and tidal waves, all those sorts of things. But there's a terrible worry of in the humanitarian field of terrorist attacks and war and those sorts of things. Are you giving thoughts to those too?
You know, we did respond in the Boston Marathon bombings, and we were in the Westin Hotel during the response efforts, and we helped on the social media end with the city of Boston and a few others. Mm-hmm. And we do look into terrorist events. We are obviously partially a volunteer-based organization, so we certainly want to keep our innovators safe, healthy, and happy during response and recovery and innovating real time. But that is something that in the past we have responded to.
And you're still working with FEMA, but tell us some of the other agencies that are involved. Can you name them, or are you all just such volunteers that it's kind of esoteric?
We have quite a few catalyzing partnerships that should be coming to fruition. I'd love to share them when they're more formally in place. I want them to be able to announce it first, and then we will announce it. But I believe this would be a fantastic topic for us on Science News Radio to have a conversation with, and I bet you we could bring some of those leaders from those great organizations to have a conversation with us.
Oh, yeah. I think that's some of the stuff that you're kind of planning to do. And I know you've got some ideas in your head about the great news stories that you're going to be able to dig up. Do you have anything that you want to kind of preview us on, or are you going to surprise us?
Absolutely. I can give you a couple of sort of the spectrum of what we're looking at. We have a couple of citizen scientists who've been doing some in-depth research on existential risk. Do you know what existential risk is, Chris?
No, my dear. You're going to have to explain to me. What is existential risk?
So my definition of it, and I am not a subject matter expert, but I certainly think it's very interesting, is it's looking at the world in a different way. It's actually looking at the solar system and how it interacts. So an example of existential risk would be if we have a risk of asteroids hitting the Earth, or if we had a solar flare-up, or something that happened that would affect us that has to do with our solar system. And there are great people out there looking at how do they, quote-unquote, stabilize the universe or stabilize the solar system. So please don't quote me as a subject matter expert on existential risk. In fact, maybe we should cut that out because I need to get an official definition. Hold on, Colonel. Maybe that part just cut out for a minute so that I can get the official definition and we don't. Unfortunately, I'm not a... so give me a second.
You're always so much fun, Desi. You are always so much fun. I mean, you are so natural. People can see that, you know, our conversations are not the least bit rehearsed, that we go into them. So, okay, I'll hold off a minute. Go ahead, find out. Give me a definition of existential risk.
All right, let's see here. I'm Wikipedia-ing it because I feel like I always give my own definition, and then I'm thinking, no, I'm not really the expert on this. That's why we have the experts coming on the phone, right? Hold on a second. Okay, here we go. So one, we have a whole spectrum of topics that we will be talking about on our radio show on Science News Radio. And one of those areas will be a few citizen scientists that are doing some really in-depth research on existential risk.
We're relying on you, you know, to give us the straight poop here.
I know, and I want to be accurate. I don't want to have a... hold on.
All right.
I don't know why this is so hard to define. I mean, I know it's a very new topic, and I know how to explain it from an example. The Center for Study of Existential
Risk. All right. No, no, no. Love it. Love it. Love it, Desi. Go ahead.
So as we spoke, we have a whole lot of different topics we're going to be having at Science News Radio on all kinds of innovations. And one of our topics that we'll be talking about, Colonel, is existential risk with a couple of citizen scientists who are catalyzing and collecting all kinds of data and information for us. Some of these guys are what we have informally noted as asteroid hunters. So they're looking into the solar system to see if they can find asteroids and make sure that we don't have any collisions with the Earth.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because I always thought that asteroids were misnamed. I mean, they're floating around out there in the heavens. They should be called hemorrhoids. Don't you think? I mean, really? I mean, and the medical condition that affects so many people in the posterior, those should be called asteroids. I mean, doesn't that make more sense? I know. That has no bearing on what we're talking about right now. Continue.
And yet we have other folks who are working over at NASA who are thinking about other pieces of stabilizing the solar system and what that looks like.
Okay.
And these are all things. I know we deal with a lot of issues when it comes to looking at the Earth and the globe as a whole. But when it comes to space weather and what's going on past our atmosphere here on Earth, there's things that we need to start considering. So we'll have a couple of citizen scientists to talk about what the future of existential risk looks like. But that's not it. We also have lots of interesting topics on different skill sets that we're bringing into the humanitarian space. And one of the neat areas that we've been developing with the Field Innovation Team, but we've also subsequently did it in past disasters, is how do we get designers and design concepts and thinking into the disaster response and recovery. And I don't know, Colonel, do you know of any really good examples of innovating real time with the Field Innovation Team with design concepts, or would you like me to give one?
No, I'd love to have you give one. And you and I have kind of talked about these challenges when we've spoken before. We haven't gotten in real in-depth with it, but how about to bring this up to date? Yes, please.
All right. Well, one of the areas that we did while we were working with FEMA and Hurricane Sandy is the Field Innovation Team was tasked with looking at the physical flow of survivors through the disaster recovery centers.
Sure.
And for those who don't know what a disaster recovery center is, that is where survivors get assistance. So we had designers go into those centers and observe the experience of what it was like on the ground to be receiving assistance in the center. And they were able to catalyze all kinds of interesting ways on how we can rethink and redesign the survivor experience so that it can be a more positive and survivor-centric focus when we are in disaster response. And the neat thing is we had, from this adventure, we've actually had a couple of great things happen. One, it's actually reformed a lot of the systems within FEMA, including the creation of these things called disaster survivor assistance teams that now help to mobily register survivors. But we've also looked at ways to help and empower communities to create their own disaster recovery centers that FEMA and other agencies can then subsequently plug into. So just really, really neat, thought-provoking innovations that are changing the whole paradigm and shifting things in the disaster space.
Yeah, you brought a whole new way of looking at things to FEMA, and I know they probably really feel bad about not having you exclusive any longer now that you're working with all these other agencies. But the point is, you are working with them, and you're doing so many different things. And not only the obvious here on Earth with tornadoes and hurricanes and typhoons and that sort of stuff, but also nuclear and protections against things like what happened in Japan with Fukushima. Fukushima, and then existential risks, asteroids and things in outer space, and watching out for the things that are going to hit us from space. You're covering the neighborhood, and I'm so impressed with this, Desi.
This is going to be a really fun year, Colonel. We're not only going to have a lot of fun talking about all kinds of interesting topics and the dynamics of innovation on our Science News Radio Network together, but we also are going to have an opportunity to get real-time information on the ground while the field innovation team's deployed. Mm-hmm. So viewers and listeners can actually learn about what it's like to be on the team deployed in innovating real-time.
Yeah, so many of the reports you're going to be giving us are going to be right from the site, right from the scene, and things as they're going on, and the recovery and the disaster response that is going on right at the time. So we're going to get some real on-site stuff from you.
That's correct, yes. And it won't be every disaster that the field innovation team is going to go down to, but it's going to be two or three of the biggest disasters for the year. So we're looking forward to, most importantly, helping survivors, and secondly, empowering them with forward-leaning innovations to help their communities recover and make our world a little bit more resilient.
Oh, Desi, that's going to be sensational. Well, we're so glad to have you aboard. We knew right away when we spoke to you the first time that you're a very talented lady, and you're going to bring a great dimension to the Science News Radio Network. And so on as a regular news correspondent for us is a very sensational thing, and we're looking forward to working closely with you.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, Colonel, too. I'm a big fan of Science News Radio, and I think it's going to be a really, like I said, we're going to have a lot of fun this year, and it's going to be quite an exciting and exhilarating year, particularly in the disaster space.
All right, Desi Battelle-Anderson, formerly exclusively with FEMA, and now new news correspondent now for the Science News Radio Network. So glad you came on and gave us a preview.
Thank you so much, Colonel. I look forward to some future collaboration.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Good news that's coming out of my career, and I've been doing this a long time. I've always been in the water and of environmental stuff, is that the consumer and municipalities, sub-state water regulatory agencies, states, and even the federal government. I get a little nervous when the federal government does it, but I think that people are becoming more and more educated on the value of water, and it had been taken for granted for a long time, surface water, but especially groundwater. People understand that what we have is all we have, and in a lot of cases with groundwater, once you contaminate it, it's contaminated for good. But what I'm seeing through programs like water reuse, aquifer storage and recovery, use of gray water, things like that, that agencies and municipalities are aggressively getting into water reuse and water management. They're managing water. And that doesn't mean just getting it from the lake to the treatment plant to the pipe to the house and then back to the treatment plant. They're getting very, very savvy about managing water quantity and quality, and it's very heartening. I feel like progress has been made in the last 40 years. Mike Pate, Executive Director, Groundwater Protection Council.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting for you. I am waiting. seeds for you.